So I'm going to talk about forearm fractures and longitudinal instability of the forearm. So forearm fractures obviously include the radius and ulna. I'll stick mostly to, you know, middle third injuries rather than getting too much into the wrist and elbow. But, you know, and those of you who attend the AO Principles course, I think you've probably heard this, that to some degree, forearm fractures have to be considered kind of like articular injuries. Now, why is that? They're obviously not articular injuries, but it's a motion segment, right? So you're not going to get post-traumatic arthritis from malreducing a radius fracture and, you know, mid-shaft radius fracture. But the problem is you will potentially affect motion at the joints if you malreduce a mid-shaft radius fracture, and also potentially lead to instability at the proximal or distal radial ulnar joints. So it's a unique kind of situation. Obviously, the tibia and fibula, there's no rotation that takes place, so you don't really have a quite an analogous place in the body where you have to kind of think about, you know, how the concepts need to be considered. So when addressing these, so let's just go back, you know, let's start off in the ER. So you're in the ER, you see a patient with a forearm fracture. A lot of ulna shaft fractures can be treated non-surgically, and almost all radial shaft fractures have to be treated surgically. Gunshot fractures are a little bit unusual in that you typically don't have necessarily the same degree of instability with gunshot fractures that you do with, for instance, let's say a Montage injury. So sometimes they have to be, you know, considered a little bit differently. But for your typical, you know, blunt trauma, forearm fractures, the ulnar fractures, you know, if they're nightstick injuries and minimally angulating displaced, can be treated non-surgically. So when you have both bones fractured, I think it is good to try and get some type of reduction. I mean, I think you don't really want to have something where the bone's like, you know, tenting the skin and you just kind of splint it in situ. So you try to get your best reduction, but you don't try again and again and again. I mean, you're generally not going to get it, and it's going to be operative. And you just want to get them in a comfortable position and splint them. You do have to keep in mind forearm fractures, like tibia fractures, are potentially prone to compartment syndrome. So again, if you have an obtunded patient, a patient who can't communicate well, you know, significant swelling that you got to be concerned about, you do have to think about compartment syndrome sometimes. And, you know, we send a lot of these patients out. So you have to be sure that they know to look for those signs and symptoms when you're sending them out. And if you don't feel comfortable sending them out, it's not completely unreasonable to sometimes admit a patient with, you know, a displaced radius and ulna fracture. They're going to be operative anyway. Now, when operating on these, you have to remember that you want to restore radial bow. You want to sometimes, if you're not sure, get a contralateral forearm x-ray. We don't always do that, but it can be helpful if there's a question. If you have a very comminuted radial shaft fracture, it could be a good idea to do that. Whereas if you have a simple fracture, it's probably not necessary. Now, generally speaking, ORAF should be done in 95% plus cases, that is with plates and screws. I do think there is a role for intramedullary fixation, mainly for very, very nasty open injuries, degloving injuries, and injuries where you may have, let's just say, an exposed plate for a prolonged period of time in a dirty wound or something like that, or a wound that's not covered or closed, that's going to get colonized. Maybe an intramedullary device is better in that situation. But almost always, it's been shown that compression plating or bridge plating, but plating is the way to go. Now, when operating on these, if you have a very comminuted fracture and a simple fracture, so let's say the radius is simple and the ulna is comminuted, I think it makes sense to go to the simple fracture first. Now, why is that? Well, because the simple fracture, you're more likely to get anatomically reduced, right? Whereas the comminuted fracture, you may not. Now, you can take a comminuted fracture and anatomically reduce the fragments, use mini fragment screws, then go ahead and compress it. But it's just, even if you do that, you're just more likely to be off. You know, you're off 1 degree with three fragments. Now you're off by like 3 degrees, and it looks anatomic, but it's really not. So I always address the simple fracture first, and then you can do the other fracture. Keep in mind, sometimes when you're operating on these, once you fix one fracture, the other fracture is much less mobile. You know, when both bones are broken, you can kind of move the forearm anyway. You can, you know, deliver the fragments up if you have to. Once you fix one of the bones, then that opportunity is kind of lost. And so keep that in mind. If you think there's something that looks kind of irreducible, you may want to open both incisions, feel comfortable that you can get both reduced without too much difficulty, and then go ahead and fix one. So, it's not a bad idea to keep that incision open while you fix the other one in case, you know, in an unusual case, you can't get the one bone reduced and you need to take that plate apart or something. I mean, it's always a possibility. Make sure that when you do fix these, that you check your rotation at the end of the case. You have to make sure that you're totally convinced that you've restored supination and pronation. Many C-arm x-rays have a very small field of view, and oftentimes you cannot fully appreciate if you've restored radial bow. These are cases that I often do like to get a plain film in the OR, like a portable x-ray in a sterile cassette cover, and shoot a full-length forearm film with proper supination and, you know, proper AP and lateral images. And then you can kind of see the bone from end to end and make a better assessment about your restoration of radial bow. So a couple words about, Montagia and Galeazzi lesions. So in these cases, it's even more imperative that you get your fracture anatomically reduced because the joint dislocation depends on it, right? So, I mean, if you have a Montagia lesion, that radial head is not going to stay reduced if you don't get the ulna anatomic. And, you know, in comminuted fractures, this can be hard, right? This can be hard. You can sometimes, you know, not appreciate the fact that you've slightly malreduced, you know, the ulna. I mean, the ulna is not a perfectly straight bone. You can potentially, cause it to become angulated and allow the radius to persistently sublux. I would say you almost never have to do like a ligament repair or some type of reconstruction, you know, of the annular ligament or something like that. If you get to these acutely and you, you know, get the ulna fixed, you should be able to get the radial head to go back in and stay in. Now, I don't think the same can be said about the distal radial ulnar joint, which is somewhat of a sloppy joint to begin with, right? There's translation that occurs as well as rotation at the DRUJ. Make sure that if there's a question ahead of time, you get contralateral images before you start the case. And you know what the other wrist looks like on a lateral image, for instance. When you fix the radius, when you fix the radius fracture, you need to make sure you get good images at the wrist and confirm that you're reduced. Now, sometimes you'll reduce, but it's unstable. So if it reduces and it's unstable and you're convinced that there's nothing else you can do with the radius that's perfect, you know, then those are the cases sometimes you have to, you know, consider immobilizing in a position of stability. So for instance, if they're, you know, stable in full supination and they dislocate in pronation, well, then you sometimes have to immobilize them in supination for some time. And sometimes those are the cases you have to put a pin in and hope that it doesn't break before you take it out. That is, you know, across the distal radius and ulna. If you can't get it reduced at all, then those are the cases you have to do an open reduction of the distal radial ulnar joint And in those cases, you often have to hold them with a pin as well. So most cases, you don't have to do it, but it's a technique you should be aware of. You may have to treat it, treat one of these when you're out in practice, and you don't want to get stuck with some DRUJ that's subluxing, and you don't know how to open the DRUJ. So something you should probably be familiar with, and it's typically approached dorsally. Now, in any of these cases, always, always, always check the wrist and elbow at the end of your case. You don't want to be that person who, fixes a forearm fracture and you realize at the end of the case that something subluxed at the PRUJ or DRUJ. So just do that religiously. It's very easy. Even with the mini C arm, just get a nice elbow, nice wrist images at the end of the case. Even if you're just doing a mid-shaft forearm fracture, you want to convince yourself that there's no missed longitudinal injury, let's say. I think you should be able to move these patients early. I often immobilize them for a very short period of time, but if you can move them early, especially if there's no instability whatsoever, just straight up forearm fracture, you should be able to get them supinating and pronating. They can get stiff if you immobilize them for too long. So I think I'm about out of time, certainly over time. Hopefully those are some tips for you that are helpful. Thanks.